Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Levine with a runway, lays it in, plus the foul. Zach Levine does it again.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all your texts, all your voicemails. We've got the NBA lottery Tuesday night. So you got any thoughts before the NBA lottery, hit us up at 331-979-1369 or tweet at us at Locked On Bulls. Back here on this Friday episode, and we have a great interview for you. It's Casey Johnson from the Chicago Tribune. Fairly recurring guest. We haven't talked to Casey in probably a couple months, so this was an interesting interview and really fun one, and it's always great to have Casey Johnson on the show. Before we get started here, I want to let you guys know we had a little bit of technical difficulties throughout this episode, more so on my side than anybody else's, but for the first 10 or 15 minutes, interview goes as normal. Matt and I are both a part of the interview, but then you'll hear me drop out, so Matt will take you home in the last 20-25 minutes of the interview, so it'll just be Matt and Casey. So thanks to Comcast, a little bit of internet trouble, but that's okay. The interview was still really great, and great information from Casey Johnson, so thank you again to him. But without further ado, here is Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls, our buddy who does terrific work covering the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune, a longtime Bulls beat writer and reporter, Casey Johnson. Follow him on Twitter to get all of his work for the Trib at KCJ Hoop. Casey, welcome back to the pod, man. How are things since the Bulls season ended?
Going well, pretty slow, just the way we like it in the off season, and it's going to ramp up obviously here with the May 14th draft lottery, and then the combine. So next week we have to put the work hat back on. But thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Welcome back. We're glad to have you. Before we get to summer goings on like draft and free agency and all that fun stuff, let's start with the news that has broken over the last day or so with regard to Jim Boylan and his staff and some changes that are happening. First, we heard that it was the former Brooklyn Nets and Denver Nuggets assistant coach Chris Fleming being added to Boylan's staff. We heard that they got to know each other when Boylan was paying him a visit when he was doing work for the German national team, where former Bull, who Gar Forman was high on, Paul Zipser, was spending some time playing. Your initial thoughts on the Chris Fleming addition to Boylan's staff?
You know, I don't know Chris personally. I know people that do know him and talk to those people. And, you know, obviously it's a pretty tight-knit fraternity, but, you know, there's a lot of people that praise him pretty highly for his, not only his offensive acumen, but also his work ethic. You know, obviously he's had coaching experience, albeit in Europe, but, you know, a lot of those European coaches, from my perspective, you know, really need to be creative and progressive with a lot of ideas. So, I think probably the most refreshing aspect of the hire is it's just somebody that's kind of, you know, doesn't really have a lot of ties to the organization. He's like a fresh voice, fresh ideas. And like I said, the people I've talked to that know him, praise him pretty highly. So I think there was no secret being made by either Jim or management that they wanted to try to upgrade the staff. And, you know, whenever they announce his hire as official, that'll be one step towards that goal.
I'm curious about Chris Fleming and maybe some of the things that Boylan was trying to add. Did you get any insight to what Boylan was looking for on his staff specifically, like some strengths and some weaknesses for the rest of his coaching staff? Because I know this might not be the last move that he makes. Did you get any sense of what he was, what Boylan was specifically looking for to add to his bench?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the article today I mentioned how Fleming's been a part of, you know, young teams that have started to make progressions. Now, when he was with Mike Malone's staff in Denver for the one season, they didn't win much, but a lot of that season was about player development, and then obviously the Nuggets have, since the 15-16 season, taken a big jump. And then, you know, being hired by Kenny Atkinson, who I guess he played college basketball with at Richmond, the Nets clearly have, you know, valued player development and been lauded for the jumps that they've made over the last three seasons. So beyond the offensive acumen and the X's and O's, I know that Jim sought somebody who's a worker and is hungry and has kind of lived what the Bulls hope to experience over these next 1 to 2 seasons. You know, John Paxson, the soundbite that keeps coming out to me from that season ending news conference was, we want to be relevant again. I mean, obviously the Bulls have become irrelevant with the victory challenge first two seasons of the rebuild. And, you know, I know that was attractive to Jim that he brought somebody out who's kind of lived the jump that the Bulls are hoping to make here in the next 1 to 2 seasons.
Casey, the thing that I'm wondering and curious about is how might add some kind of insight or present some new ideas to Boylan, and maybe we see a shift in how the Bulls approach offensive basketball next season. Because I mean, you're talking about him being a high target because of the young player development that was successful in Brooklyn over the past couple seasons, which he certainly had a hand in. But if you look at what Brooklyn has done that led them to being a playoff team this year in this pretty quick rebuild that worked out for them, a lot of it was, look, like if you just look at Brooklyn's stats, their tendency to take more three-pointers increased steadily under the tutelage of Chris Fleming being on that staff of Atkinson. Their pace increased steadily over the last couple of seasons with Fleming on board. And here we have Jim Boylan, who slowed the Bulls offensively to a halt. Yes, he did speed it up a bit when he started to get some healthy pieces back in his roster and go to that multi-ball handling system, but still is a guy who is insisting that first and foremost, the Bulls need to outscore their opponents in the paint on a nightly basis. So do you see a clash in philosophies there? And if so, do you think that Fleming might get Boylan to bend a little bit on his, what some might call, outdated offensive philosophy?
Well, I don't want to speak to Fleming's philosophy too much because I don't know it very well. I've never spoken to the man. I mean, I'm just going off of what other people have told me. But yes, he worked on a staff in Brooklyn that obviously eschewed the mid-range jumper and focused on three-point shots. I think they've been top five in three-point attempts over the last three seasons. So, I mean, Atkinson obviously deserves the most credit for that. But, yeah, he's on that staff. So you think that there'd be some potential for growth there. You know, one thing that really jumped out again about the season-ending stuff was John Paxson being asked directly about the philosophy and him saying that, you know, they never said they don't want to shoot threes. They just value paint touches. I think it's more paint touches and getting the ball in there and then sprayed out the shooters. He did say that we don't need to shoot 53s. I don't know what the Nets average was. I know it was high. So, you know, I don't know if there's going to be a conflict there, but yeah, it's good to have guys that, you know, in theory value that shot. I mean, that's where the league's gone. And I think the Bulls, you know, obviously lagged well behind the league average in three-point attempts last season. They were near the bottom. I think the last I checked, they were 30th. I don't know if that's where they finished in attempts. I'm pretty sure it is. So I think you need to have a balance. Obviously, Jim values paint touches. I have no problem with paint touches. I think three-point attempts are probably, in today's day and age, a little bit more valuable than points in the paint. But we'll see how that plays out as the staff gets finalized.
The other element regarding Jim and his staff that came out yesterday is that Texas Tech assistant and defensive coordinator Mark Adams, who played a heavy hand in that team's run all the way through the March Madness tournament, is another person that Jim is looking to add to his staff. It was reported by Jeff Goodman, and you added on to Goodman's report saying that Boylan covets the defensive mind of Mark Adams, but you have been told that there are potential hurdles for this hire to be cleared. Can you clue us in on what those hurdles are, and do you think this hire will happen?
I have no idea whether it'll happen or not. What I do know is that the Bulls want him. And when you say hurdles, I mean, obviously that if Texas Tech made it to the championship game because of defense, right? And he's the defensive mastermind. So I don't think it takes much to deduce why there are some hurdles. Texas Tech obviously wants to keep him. So I've never spoken to Mark Adams. I don't know his situation. But I do know that the Bulls want him.
So the hurdle is prying him away from Texas Tech, not getting the clearance of Boylan's bosses to add him to the staff.
That's my understanding. I mean, look, he's interviewing. So obviously if he's interviewing with management, I would think they'd be open to adding him. And look, we talked before about, you know, voices and staff and things like that. If you add, in theory, a guy who's being praised for his offensive acumen and Fleming, and then obviously a guy whose defensive work was on display for the whole country to see with Texas Tech's run to the NCAA title game, I think that's probably and two guys who aren't known really to Bulls fans or have many ties to the Bulls. I think that in theory would probably be a good offseason as far as strengthening the staff. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, I know that Jim is pleased with, you know, the Fleming thing isn't official, but I was told it was agreed to. So, and Jim really coveted him. So, you know, I would think that if Jim also gets Mark, then he'd be very happy.
Before we kind of transition away from Jim Boylan, the other biggest part of this offseason, I think, is the Bulls giving Jim Boylan a multi-year extension, you know, and some fans seemingly are a little bit upset about that. And to me, I think it's kind of a wait and see type of thing with Jim Boylan. Just from listening to Jim Boylan or even talking to him, going into next season, what do you think is the biggest upgrade Jim Boylan can make in terms of the way he's coaching and the way he wants to operate, some things that maybe limited him this season when he started halfway through this season? I know healthy training camp is going to be one and very obvious, but is there anything that you got off right off the top of the bat that Jim Boylan wants to improve on going into next season and feel like as specifically as a coach and maybe not just as a team?
You're talking my opinion or Jim? What Jim thinks he needs to improve on?
What's the question? Yeah, what Jim thinks he needs to improve on?
I'm not sure he's addressed that. I mean, from my perspective, I would say consistency. I mean, I think then you heard John Paxson talk about sometimes the defensive plans would change so much, and I think part of that was kind of the changing personnel due to the injury situation. But even before last season, there were you know, issues with that when he was kind of known as Fred Hoiberg's defensive coordinator. I think you can have obviously different game plans and different defensive packages to approach different opponents. However, I think you need something to kind of hang your hat on and a base. And I don't really feel like the Bulls have ever established that defensively since Thibodeau left. And, you know, you can point to personnel to some extent, but I also think some of that is consistency with the coaching and the game plan. So I personally think that would be one thing. I'm trying to think what Jim has said in terms of, I mean, Jim is one thing that I think is starting to get understood, but I think was a little misunderstood with the fan base, at least that comes across my sphere, is Jim is a very inward-looking guy. He doesn't feel like he has all the answers. He cares deeply, and he works. And you know, he said, I guess this did come out in the wake of that first week. You know, he said, like, look, nobody is going to make more mistakes than me. Nobody has more to learn on this job than me. And This guy cares, man. He puts the work in. And so I think the fact he's going to have an off season, I think the fact he's going to have a training camp, I think these things, and look, if he gets these two staff hires done, I think most fans will react favorably to that. So I think there can be some momentum going into next season. I would but 100% agree with your assessment that the fan base was, you know, in large part was, it didn't, the extension was not very well received. I mean, the amount of stuff that crosses my sphere via social media or email or what have you is, you know, almost unanimously negative towards that extension. But look, Jim is, he's comfortable in who he is. He's secure in his own skin. And, like I said, he's not a guy who thinks he has all the answers or it's his way or the highway. So I think the fact that he's, you know, going to put the work into trying to make improvements and also, you know, try to strengthen the staff can bode well moving into next season. Now it's got to play out in results. I'm not saying that my words are going to change everything, but it's got to play out in results. But I do think there's a little bit of a misperception out there about Jim feeling like he's like, you know, the man or has all the answers. I think Jim is a collaborative person. I think John Paxson has made that clear publicly. He's very inclusive with his conversations with his staff, with players, with management, with ownership. And I personally think that's something that is a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something that the fans sort of have to get used to if they're not used to already, is just Jim Boylan's personality and the difference between him and Fred Hoiberg. Like, Fred Hoiberg had been around for over three years, and their personalities are completely different. So I feel like maybe it took a little bit of time for some fans, and I can speak for myself. You know, for a lot of that, I felt like it was coming across fake, but I know now it's not fake because that's who Jim Boylan is. Jim Boylan is somebody who has a brightened, charismatic personality when he's talking to the media or even when he's coaching. So that's something that I think a lot of fans have to get used to. I'm curious. I want to circle back to a point that you had made earlier, and that's talking about the paint touches and play in the paint, and specifically about Wendell Carter Jr. So if they don't bring back Robin Lopez, in your opinion, do you feel like Jim Boylan is going to make some shifts and some changes in terms of the way he used the big man? Because Robin Lopez could do a lot. And it felt like at times when the Bulls needed a bucket badly, they went to Robin Lopez to work it in the paint. Do you feel like there's going to be some change at all with Wendell Carter Jr. and how he's operated and used in the offense next season? And what do you kind of expect from Carter and Boylan's relationship on the floor?
Well, I still think that the main focus and impetus with Carter will be on the defensive end. I mean, obviously, his instincts and his maturity for his age are kind of stand out for that, and especially coming off of an injury. I think that's where you can kind of make your immediate impact and establish your base. Offensively, I think you've already heard Boylan talk about the center position, you know, possibly being utilized differently just by virtue of the fact they're talking about using Lauri Markkanen and playing him more minutes at center and him bulking up and him playing, you know, some five and some lineups where they go a little bit smaller. You know, Carter's offensive game to me is still really raw. I think he, you know, if you look at his free throw form, he's got a wonderful shot. So you'd like to think at some point that can be extended out, you know, definitely to the elbow. And if not, all the way out to the 3-point line. There were moments where he showed a little bit of prowess, or at least acknowledgement of attempting that shot. Not as much as I think I'd like to see, you know, especially with the pre-draft comps of Al Horford. So I think his offense clearly is lagging behind his defense. And coming off that injury, I think you're going to be looking for him to establish that base defensively. But I think the center position will be utilized differently. And, you know, Robin is going to be an interesting thing because I can see Robin being the kind of guy he loves it here in Chicago, who would give it a hometown discount. I just think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to playing time. And I think he's going to get an opportunity elsewhere where he's going to have more opportunity. I think money's less important to him than playing time.
When it comes to the fact that they fired Fred and replaced him with Jim, after praising Fred when hiring him for his communication skills, and now you're saying that, you know, they really value Boylan's communication. Paxson even said in his end of season press conference that he probably has had more communication, more dialogue with Jim Boylan, assuming, you know, in the 4 months that he's been the head coach, than the previous guys combined. Now, the way he phrased it was a little confusing, you know, context wise, but the way I interpreted it was John Paxson was saying he's had more dialogue with Jim Boylan than several previous head coaches combined. Now, what does that say to you, Casey?
I read that comment similarly, but I didn't have as much of a problem with it as you. And first of all, I mean, when they praised Fred's communication skills, I think they also meant like with the players and just kind of more of like a player friendly coach. But look, Fred talked to management all the time. I know that for a fact. And they had certainly a good relationship. Even till the end. I mean, you know, nobody dislikes Fred Hoiberg. I mean, he's like the nicest guy ever. What I think Jim has done, and this is what I alluded to earlier, is Jim's personality is like really inclusive, and it's really intense, and it's really eager to please. He likes helping people, and he likes listening. So in that sense, he's constantly in contact with ownership. He's constantly in contact with management, and he's just checking in. Like, you know, are things going the way you want it to go? Are we doing the right thing here? He's a very curious person. He seeks information. He looks inward. He's inclusive. So I think that's kind of what John is alluding to. And the reason I'm elucidating this is because this is how Jim is with the media too. And, you know, Jordan, you mentioned before about how fans kind of need to get used to this. You know, like, this is why it's not really a surprise to those of us who have been around the team, because this is who Jim was as a lead assistant. And, you know, you can say maybe that wasn't conveyed or whatever, but, like, you don't often write about the lead assistants. But I actually looked back recently. When he was first hired, I did a sit-down with him, and I did a really, really long profile on him in the Tribune. And the intensity that jumps off even to this day off the page from that interview, it talks about how he was coaching it, you know, volunteer coaching at this like pro-am league in Long Beach, California, and living in this like dive hotel and eating bad food every day. And he was like never happier. I mean, it's just the guy's a lifer, and he lives and breathes it. So that's his personality. That's his intensity level. And as I mentioned before, he's a really inclusive person on really all levels of the organization, media, players, management, ownership. That's just who he is as a person.
Casey, when you wrote your column kind of talking about what's at stake now that John Paxson has found his guy and given Jim Boylan this extension, and Jim and John Paxson selling this rebuild to Michael Reinsdorf and his father, Jerry, the question that I have, and, you know, just to read a quick clip here from that column you wrote about the Boylan extension, there's a lot at stake for both Boylan and Paxson. Coaches, the saying goes, are hired to be fired. Reinsdorf hired executives, the local joke says, work on lifetime scholarship. Paxson doesn't believe in that. I mean, you call it a local joke that John Paxson seems to have this lifetime immunity of job security. I don't think the fan base thinks that's funny. Or maybe they did, but I don't think they think it's funny anymore. I think the bulk of the fan base is just, you know, exasperated and frustrated at this point that the joke has worn off. There's no novelty left. And we truly do believe that they have lifetime immunity. Or certainly at least John Paxson does, and there's nothing the fan base can do to change that unless literally the United Center becomes completely empty on a nightly basis. So you say there's a lot at stake for Boylan and Paxson, and while there may be something at stake for Boylan, even though he's gotten his extension, like, what makes you believe, if you do, that there is anything at stake for John Paxson?
Two words, Jerry Krause.
Well, can you expand upon that?
I wanted that to linger for a little bit because to me, this is a pretty powerful example. Jerry Krause won 6 championships. He got fired. Okay, you can say at the time it was resigned for health reasons. We all wrote it as resigned for health reasons, and ultimately we uncovered resigned under pressure. He was basically fired. Okay, that's been well documented, or at least, you know, told like you need to resign or else. So Jerry Krause won 6 championships. The Floyd rebuild didn't work. And ultimately Jerry Reinsdorf reached a breaking point. So, you know, I think there's quite a bit at stake in this rebuild. John sold to ownership that Jimmy Butler needed to be traded. He tried to do it in 16. That was well reported at the time. Didn't happen. Celtics deal never materialized. Happened in 17. we're two seasons into it. There's still a lot of faith and positivity and optimism within the organization that the rebuild is the right decision and the right move. They feel even more encouraged by it after the addition of Otto Porter Jr. So I'm not painting a doom or gloom picture. What I'm saying is, my sense is that this rebuild needs to work. And I'm not sure John Paxson will ever get fired. And I know he joked later that he was joking when he said, you know, you guys may get your wish or whatever on that radio interview, that if this rebuild doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But John's been doing this a long time, and he believes in this rebuild, and he's still very passionate about it. I can see, you know, if this doesn't work out, or, you know, it 2 seasons from now or 3 seasons from now, because they've talked about patience, they're still winning in the 20s. I just don't see John being here. That's just my personal opinion. I want to make clear, I'm not reporting that. I'm not basing that on, this is just completely my own personal opinion. So that's why I think there's a lot at stake here. And I understand why people are skeptical of that, but I'll go back to my original point. Jerry Krause.
Yeah, but Krause had kind of a rocky relationship with everyone in the Bulls organization, players, coaches, ownership. John Paxson is the golden boy who won them their third championship and who, as most fans believe, in the eyes of Jerry Reinsdorf and his son Michael, can do no wrong. And just to make sure I get what you're saying, and again, to our listeners, you're not reporting anything here. This is merely what you feel might happen when you say Paxson won't be here if this doesn't work. Not that he will get fired, as you said, but that it would take John Paxson going to the Reinsdorfs to say essentially, like, please, for the love of God, fire me. I don't want to do this job anymore because it's not working.
Well, I don't know what scenario would happen, but and I would also dispute that Jerry had a bad relationship with ownership. That Jerry Krause had a bad relationship with ownership. Look, Jerry Reinsdorf is, you know, he's a businessman first and foremost. Okay. I mean, that's how he made his money. I mean, he's now clearly in the business of winning, and that's why he signed off on 2 rebuilds on both teams he owns. He's hoping that the rebuilds will work.
Right.
I don't know the scenario in which it would play out. I just, my sense is that if this rebuild doesn't work, John Paxson won't be here past it. That's just my sense. So I'm not going to speculate as to how it would play out or how it would happen. That's just my opinion.
Fair enough. All right. So, Casey, moving on to what the Bulls face this offseason as they're trying to get this roster back on track. Obviously, Paxson cited the injuries, which have been a problem for the last couple of seasons. There was really only a small stretch in the middle of the season when they actually had a soft schedule and played well. With that coinciding with the Otto arrival, they actually went, I think, like 7-3 once Otto Porter Jr. arrived. But they still did admit that they need to address a couple things this offseason in free agency. And most notably, as Paxson said, he used the phrase, not going to beat around the nose. That's the point guards. From what you've heard recently, or just from your eye test watching this team and watching Chris Dunn struggle through his second season with the Bulls, do you think that they play as a backup? Do you think that they might be dangling him as a potential draft night trade? And if they do keep him, what veteran free agents might they bring into, as some would say, try to challenge Chris Dunn for that starting point guard spot?
Yeah, I mean, John's on record of saying publicly that they want to upgrade the position. I mean, you don't get any more blunt than that. So I personally still think there's a role for Chris Dunn on this team. I actually think he can be a pretty effective piece coming off the bench. I know a lot of other people have voiced that opinion. I agree with that opinion. I think in some roles he could be a starter still. I just don't think he fits really well with the multi-ball handler system, which he's, you know, addressed ad nauseum to this point in several interviews. So I don't know. He's on a rookie deal. He can defend. He's not scared of big moments. He's performed well in critical stretches. So I still think he can be a nice piece for this team, but it's clear they're going to add a point guard. It's just whether or not they do it via the draft or free agency. And obviously that question will in part be at least partially answered May 14th with the draft lottery. If they don't do it via the draft, you know, the pool of free agent point guards is very deep and a different price point. So I think you can probably try to go in with a strategy of, you know, how much of the roughly $20 million of cap space you have, you want to devote to point guard, and how much you want to devote to another big, or how much you want to devote to a shooter, a wing shooter, and kind of set your price points there and make the decisions that way. You know, clearly a guy like Rubio or Collison would cost more than a guy like Corey Joseph or there's some restricted guys that are attractive. I think that's one possibility. It's like I said, it's a deep pool. Look, Derrick Rose wouldn't cost as much as Rubio or Collison. So, I know that they're going to be able to add somebody, and in their mind, obviously, whoever they add will be an upgrade or at least help the position. So, like I said, it's just a matter of whether they do it via the draft or free agent.
Perhaps almost as popular among the fan base as the idea of bringing Derrick Rose home, which I'm not a fan of. I think that is just opening a giant can of worms, is another Chicago name, a guy who, you know, held his own and looked like a big difference maker, not just through their surprisingly positive season, but in their first round series where they gave the Warriors a bit of a fight. And that's current Clipper Pat Beverly. I know a lot of Bulls fans would love to see him, come to Chicago. Certainly a veteran who's well-respected across, be a great leader for the locker room, could be a big upgrade for the Bulls defensively in the back offensive end. I just personally, I would love to see Pat Bev. It is, given the fact that we'll see what the Clippers do, and if they end up landing one or even two huge free agent additions, they might not be able to afford to keep him. But even still, if he hits the open market, I don't know if the Bulls have the best offer and can make the best pitch for a guy whose name is really popular all over the league right now. What are your thoughts on Pat Bev coming to the Bulls?
I do think that he has a very good chance to stay with the Clippers, although obviously the Clippers have big designs in free agency. So we'll have to see, what kind of money they have left over, or what kind of salary cap exceptions they can use to retain him. The one thing you always hear about guys and playing in their, some people think playing in their hometown is a challenge. I know for a fact, like Derrick Rose, Beverly would embrace the opportunity to play in his hometown. So I actually think the possibility of him getting him is legitimate. If that's what the Bulls are focused on, I have no idea if they are. I think he would be a good fit. I did have somebody question, like, is he a point guard really? He doesn't really handle the ball a lot with the Clippers. He has turned himself into an excellent spot up 3-point shooter, and obviously his defense and leadership and intangibles are off the charts. So I think whether or not he's a point guard, I think the other things make him a fit regardless, but it is a valid question. I mean, cause Lou Williams has the ball in his hands a lot in with the Clippers, and he does play off the ball a lot. But I think he's gettable if that's what the Bulls want to do. I think, like I said, the Clippers have, obviously a lot of free agency plans this summer with the amount of cap space they have.
And as we wrap up, obviously point guard is the big concern for the fan base, for management. They know they need to address it. Any names or any, guys who are going to be those second or third tier veteran free agents who the Bulls could offer, a respectable but still modest contract to address some depth throughout the rest of the bench? Because we know that John Paxson said, getting a Denzel Valentine healthy back, which we'll see if that happens, getting Chandler Hutchison back, they're going to add some depth just by getting some guys back healthy who they lost at one point throughout the season, or in Denzel's case, for the entire season. I still wouldn't be all that thrilled with the Bulls' depth coming into next season if adding a veteran point guard and then just having the depth of having Denzel healthy and Hutchison healthy really upgrades the bench, because towards the end of the season, it was like watching a G League team and a G League bench play out there. And any names that just like, if you were in the Bulls situation, you would go see if this veteran wing or this veteran front court guy would be available to help boost up that bench that struggled so much this season.
You're talking about specific names? No, I don't really have. I don't. Other than point guard, that's what I've been focused on. I mean, look, they're going
to. Okay. A lot of people have been talking about offering Taj Gibson like a veteran minimum deal to come back home.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of player you're talking about trying to add, is veterans who can know how to play and just and are about the right things. I mean, I come back to that line that jumped out to me from Paxson's press conference is, we're trying to be relevant again. I mean, that's what you need. You need veteran guys who are about the right things and can still contribute on the court. I'm pretty sure they're going to want to try to add more than one piece. So I don't think you're going to be throwing $20 million at point guard. You're going to have money left over and you're going to be able to add some other guys. Like I said, either a wing shooter or a big man.
All right, Casey. And final one. I think it was last year, maybe a couple years ago, you had a great piece where you detailed all the ins and outs of what happens on NBA draft lottery night. We are less than a week away. Bulls fans know that magic number, 12.5%. The team that came in fourth in those draft lottery standings behind the top three teams that have the equal 14%, Knicks, Suns, and Cavs. I know you're not much of a crystal ball guy, Casey, but do you think the Bulls get lucky? We haven't really gotten lucky since 2008 when we totally cashed in on that less than 2% chance for Derrick Rose. How do you see draft night, lottery draft night shaking out?
I have a weird feeling, and I will be in the back room for my third time, which is always an invite that you both appreciate. And then once you get in, you rue because it's god awful boring.
They like confiscate your phone and treat you like a prisoner, basically?
Yeah, you got no phone, no computer, no nothing. You're basically in there with a notepad and a pen, and you can chit chat with some people, so that's fun. But it's you're in there for a while, and it's cool the league does it for transparency reasons, and you can kind of get a lighthearted second day story out of it. But it's pretty damn boring. I mean, they post a video online right away, so anybody can watch it. I have a weird feeling they're going to finish first or second. I feel like they've been kind of, as I mentioned before, irrelevant the last couple seasons, and I just feel like they're due a stroke of luck to kind of jumpstart their relevancy again. So I have a weird feeling that they're going to finish first or second. Which of those two, I don't know. But I told this story before. I wasn't even watching the Derrick Rose draft lottery because they had 1.7% chance. So the fact that I'm watching this one maybe doesn't bode well for my prediction. We'll see.
Well, I mean, first or second, I think everybody knows that this is essentially a one player draft, but now people's thinking it might be a two player draft. I think if the Bulls land one or two, and that means Zion or Ja, Bulls fans are going to be pretty happy with the results, and this team and this fan base could certainly use a break. All right, Casey, we'll let you go. As always, we appreciate your time. You should read all of Casey's coverage of the Chicago Bulls for the Chicago Tribune and follow him on Twitter for all of his latest Bulls updates at KCJHoop. Casey, enjoy the draft lottery nights, and hopefully we'll talk to you sometime this summer when this Bulls roster starts to come a little clearer into view.
Yep, happy to join you. Thanks for having me on, and enjoy your guys' podcast. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Casey. Talk to you next time.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Again, thank you to Casey Johnson for hopping on the show with us. As always, follow him on Twitter at KCJHoop if you don't already, and follow all of his coverage all season long and all summer long at the Chicago Tribune. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you. Couple days away from the NBA lottery. You got any additional thoughts before we find out our fate on Tuesday? Hit us up, 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, and our guest, Casey Johnson. We are out of here, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt and our guest, Casey Johnson, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.